Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the docket, well, the Letitia Stout preliminary hearing is over, and we have to wait. Second, another version of events from Alex Murdoch's attorney, singer charged with an animal cruelty case, a Navy chief petty officer has been charged with the death of her husband. Wait to hear how this turned out. Bill Cosby has a change of plans, and let's try to help this missing woman's family. And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap of our contestants for the crown to be given this week to the dumb criminal contestant winner. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so, please hit that subscribe button as well as that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. For those of you who are new to the channel, we try to put a video up every day. We go live every Tuesday night, and then we do a Patreon show for our Patreon members Tuesday night as well. We also do a weekly recap, and you don't want to miss anything. So please hit that little bell. All right, before we get started with the docket, that's right, we need to support our sponsors. Please go to crimetalkprep.com. Why, you would say? Well, because emergencies, natural disasters, unexpected things happen. And when unexpected things happen, guess what? The power goes out and the grocery stores go vacant. You never know when something bad is going to happen. You need to be prepared. So when you go to crimetalkprep.com, that's right, you're going to be able to get a four-week food supply. And by going to crimetalkprep.com, you will get $50 off and free shipping. Listen, it's the responsible thing to do. It's not a political statement. It's about being prepared for the unexpected. That's what people do. You go on a road trip, you pack your car for those emergencies, the flat tire on the side of the road, and a hurricane is coming, a snowstorm. You never know. The unexpected, you need to be prepared. Go to crimetalkprep.com. All right, let's get straight to the docket. Letitia Stout. Now, we're going to give her the presumption of innocence because, well, we do that here in the United States of America. She hasn't been convicted yet, but I think that's coming. Bottom line is, she had a preliminary hearing that has finally taken place. It was scheduled for 2 days, and it took a little over 5 hours. That's the way a preliminary hearing should take place, even on a homicide case. Very straightforward. You put your evidence out there, and you move along. But in this particular case, for some unknown reason, the court is not going to announce whether he's going to decide the case and bind it over to go to trial until September 23rd at 9 a.m. Now, I just don't understand this. Is this like the new thing we have to sit and contemplate preliminary hearings? No. The standard in Colorado is very straightforward, okay? The prosecutor has to present some evidence to establish probable cause to each and every element of the offenses charged. It's pretty straightforward. Probable cause is a very low standard. Would a reasonable person believe that a crime was committed and that the defendant had something to do with it? That's it. Doesn't mean somebody's guilty. It just simply means there's enough evidence for the case to go forward. I cannot tell you how many preliminary hearings I have done over the years. I couldn't even tell you how many preliminary hearings I've done for homicide cases over the years. And not once, has the judge ever said, I need some time to look at my notes, do anything. That's what trial court judges do. They listen to it. They take copious notes. They rule from the bench. No one's going to get reversed on saying there's enough evidence for the case to go forward. It simply isn't going to happen. Now, the little twist that took place yesterday was that Letitia Stout didn't attend her own preliminary hearing. And apparently there was some confusion where maybe the court thought that she was somehow maybe quarantining, you know, COVID, all that kind of stuff. But then it turns out she really wasn't, but they weren't going to bring her back. And obviously the hearing didn't go into the second day, which was scheduled. I would think the court maybe thinks that he was kind of duped a little bit, that Letitia Stout just didn't want to be there. Well, guess what? You have to be there. And I would not go forward on a preliminary hearing with my client not present. I don't care whatever waiver they say why they don't want to be there. It just doesn't happen. That's a critical stage of the proceedings. They need to be there. I was a little surprised the court allowed that to take place. However, it's his courtroom. We'll see. But what did we find out yesterday? Let's just go over a couple of the highlights. For those of you who are not familiar with this case, Gannon Stauch was reported missing as a runaway on January 27th. And at first, Letitia Stauch said that he went to play with friends and didn't return. A few days later, the El Paso County Sheriff's Office amended the case to that of a missing and endangered child. And then, according to investigators, Stauch was the last person to have seen young Gannon Stauch alive. His remains were eventually found later in Florida. Now, we're not going to go into the gruesome details, but let's just say it was not a pleasant death for the young child. It was also revealed that investigators believe that Stauch rented a budget van and used a suitcase to move young Gannon's body from Colorado to Pensacola, Florida, which was found on February 1st of 2020. Now, Stauch's 17-year-old daughter tagged along on the trip. And then on the morning of February 4th of 2020, Stauch allegedly dropped the suitcase with Gannon's body inside off at the Escambia River Bridge and then traveled to Orlando and ultimately to South Carolina, where she would later be arrested. There was some video shown in court yesterday from the deputies who first responded in regards to the child's disappearance. A deputy searched the home, including underneath Gannon's bed and inside Stauch's car, but there was no indication that something violent had occurred there in the home. A search warrant was later issued for the home, and investigators found bloodstains throughout the house, specifically Gannon's bedroom and in the garage. A handgun was found on top of a dresser in the master bedroom that Stauch slept in. The DNA on the firearm matched Stauch. The defense brought up on cross-examination of the witnesses that there were three other profiles from the gun that matched men. The prosecutors confirmed that no one besides Stauch was in the home at the time of the murder. Now, FBI agent Andrew Cohen told the courtroom that the gun was the murder weapon because they were able to tell that the bullet found in young Gannon's skull came from the same handgun that was found in the bedroom. A photo of that handgun was shown and admitted into court evidence. As the case developed, detectives kept close tabs on Stauch's whereabouts after Gannon was reported missing, and using data from Stauch's car and cell phone, gee, how many times have we talked about that? Investigators tracked her movements. She allegedly picked up Gannon's father at the Colorado Springs Airport on the morning of January 28th of 2020, and the prosecutor's theory is that Stauch returned to the airport that evening to move the body north to Palmer Lake. It wasn't until January 31st when she allegedly drove her aunt's rental car with a tracking device unknowingly on it back to the area to pick up the body. She then rented a budget van and transported the body to Florida, where she eventually dumped it off a highway bridge. Now, law enforcement conducted searches in Douglas County off of Perry Road and near Palmer Lake after finding data collected from Stauch's car. Search crews found a piece of plywood that had Gannon's blood on it. It was also detailed that law enforcement received several stories as to what happened to young Gannon from Letitia Stauch, including allegations of sexual assault, kidnapping, a bike accident, and her initial report of simply failing to return home after visiting a friend. So, although the preliminary hearing is complete, maybe the court just wants to make sure Letitia Stauch is in court when he can look her in the eye and say that there is probable cause for the case to go forward. Hopefully, that's what the court intends to do. We'll continue to follow this case. Obviously, we'll give her the presumption of innocence. However, based upon what was presented at a preliminary hearing, it seems to be pretty strong evidence as it relates to Letitia Stauch being involved in the death of Gannon Stauch. The court will also make a finding that there is proof evident presumption great, and I believe that Miss Letitia Stauch will not receive a bond and she will remain in custody pending trial. Next on the docket, are you ready for some new versions of events on the Alex Murdaugh matter? Well, here we go. As we know, Alex Murdaugh called 911 on Saturday and said he had been shot while changing a tire on a remote rural road in South Carolina, then allegedly flown to a hospital. It was first reported that he was flown to Savannah, Georgia for treatment, and then there was another report that he was flown to Charleston for a report for treatment relating to a superficial gunshot wound, and he checked himself out of the hospital on Monday on his way to rehab for an opioid addiction. Well, his attorney, Alex Murdaugh's attorney, Jim Griffin, has stated that Murdaugh was taken to a hospital in Charleston just after the incident. He also said that family members have told him that Murdaugh suffered a skull fracture with an entry and exit wound and a minor brain bleed. Now, on the initial police report, there was no that was checked on the box for visible injury. The Hampton County Sheriff, T.C. Smalls, said that was probably a mistake and later released a corrected version of the incident, reporting that marked yes to visible injury with the explanation other major injury. Another difference between the two reports, the initial report marked no to the question of whether Murdaugh was using alcohol. That was changed to unknown. Now, Murdaugh has reportedly said that the truck passed him by as he was working on his tire, circled back, and opened fire. Griffin added that the driver of the truck asked if he was having car trouble, and Murdaugh began speaking with him when the gunfire started. Now, in an email, Jim Griffin wrote, "I understand that the sheriff has clarified this no visible sign of injury entry to reporters," and that he continues saying, "In any event, when the deputies arrived, Alex Murdaugh was not at the scene. He was picked up by a Good Samaritan who drove him towards the hospital." Now, Griffin says he does not know the identity of the Good Samaritan that helped Alex Murdaugh, and apparently they ultimately met up with the ambulance on the highway where he was examined, and because of the extent of his injuries, the ambulance personnel called for him to be airlifted to the hospital. Murdaugh's attorney goes on to state that there was a significant head trauma and there was a lot of blood at the scene, which is indicated by the evidence cones placed in the roadway. Alex Murdaugh's attorney goes on and states that his understanding is that the evidence cones are that of blood, and he presumes that the deputies checked the no visible sign of injury because he was not able to assess Alex himself since he had left the scene before the deputies arrived. Murdaugh's attorney continues and said that Alex's injuries were far more serious than was initially reported. We will just have to wait and see how this turns out. It's certainly getting very interesting. Now, in some other Murdaugh news, the attorney for the mother of Mallory Beach, the 19-year-old young lady that was killed in Paul Murdaugh's 2009 boat crash, well, she filed notice Wednesday to secure personal property belonging to Alex Murdaugh should he lose a wrongful death lawsuit against him, his son Buster, and the gas station that sold the underage Paul Murdaugh alcohol. This maneuver in lots of jurisdictions is called a pre-judgment writ of attachment, which basically says, hey, judge, we think that the plaintiff's civil case is pretty strong, and we don't want these assets to become encumbered or disappear so that we can collect on our judgment in the future. And as we'll talk about here in a second, it turns out there may not be a whole lot of insurance money coming to the plaintiffs in this particular case. Now, the plaintiffs filed this motion because obviously Alex Murdaugh's financial issues made headlines this week and they want to get paid. And apparently at least three insurance companies have declined to provide coverage to Alex Murdoch related to the fatal boat crash, saying he didn't know that his son's underage drinking. And they basically say, the insurance companies say, you should have. The insurance companies have said that it had no obligation to indemnify Alex Murdoch from damages because he had knowledge or should have had knowledge that his minor son illegally purchased and consumed alcohol on a regular basis by using or displaying the driver's license of his adult son, Buster Murdoch. People, this is what happens. Everybody thinks it's cute. Everybody thinks it's funny. Oh, all the underage kids are drinking, and I get it. Kids want to drink and have fun. Well, it's real funny until somebody dies, okay? And I have represented people in these types of cases, and it's not cute. It's not funny to let minors drink. I get it. You're young. You want to party. If you can go fight for your country, you should be able to have a beer. I get that. But the consequences of it are extreme, and it usually involves a situation where somebody dies or is severely injured, and then the police go back and find out who provided the alcohol. And the parents or a family member are usually the one. And so everybody's lives change because they think it's cute that the kids want to go and party. It's against the law. That's just the way it is. And you can see in this case with the Murdochs, the insurance company saying, hey, if you help provide the alcohol that led to this circumstance, why would we insure you? Guess what? Insurance companies are the most horrible human beings, well, organizations on earth. They take your money and they refuse to pay. That's how they make their money, and they will look for any reason to get out of it. But in this case, they're probably correct. So anyway, the attorneys served the notice of these liens to be placed on the 1,700-acre property in Hampton and Colton counties. And that's where Maggie and Paul Murdochs were found shot to death in June. Now, a hearing has been scheduled regarding the wrongful death suit way back in June, but that was 3 days after the murders. It was postponed, and it hasn't been rescheduled yet. The judge was expected to rule on the motion requiring the Murdochs to provide financial documentations, which they apparently had refused to do. So, and then they wanted to move the trial from Hampton County to Beaufort County, where the crash actually took place. And according to court documents, and these types of things are normally revealed in civil litigation, you have to usually disclose if there's any insurance. And apparently the Murdochs have a $500,000 insurance policy on their boat through Philadelphia Indemnity, and they've sued Alex and Buster Murdoch, the older son, to deny up to $6 million in coverage for the lawsuit. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Insurance companies just don't give out millions of dollars unless they make the other side fight for it. And if there's a way to get out of it by saying there's no coverage, they're gonna be the first ones there to do that. So Alex Murdoch's life seems to be crumbling, and it crumbles a lot faster when you don't have insurance. And although insurance companies are terrible, guess what? You should always have as much insurance as they will let you buy. And when they don't cover you, guess what? Then you sue them for bad faith. Just a little quick pointer there. Next on the docket, a singer who apparently was famous at one point, and it's either Jaheim or Jaheim, J-A-H-E-I-M. Well, he's got a bit of problems. What are his problems? Well, he's been charged with third-degree animal cruelty and failure to provide necessary care to an animal. After a quick Google search, because we're trying to make sure we get everything correct here, Jaheim's most popular song was 2002 and was entitled Put That Woman First. Put the woman first, but apparently the dog's last. There you go. So when apparently police showed up, they responded to a report that there was a puppy in distress, okay? And at the R&B's artists, they discovered six dogs in separate animal crates on the property. There were some 14 other surviving dogs that have since been taken to a local kennel for an examination. It is ongoing. And this is a sad situation because there's lots of people out there that literally love animals. They take in all the animals, but they can't provide the resources to properly care for the animal. And if anyone's had animals, you know they're expensive. They need to go to the vet. They need to be fed. They need, you know, cute scarves, cool collars. They're expensive. And I get you love animals, but you're not doing any good if you can't provide a good home for them. So Jaheim may be time to get back into the studio instead of taking care of animals. All right, next on the docket, a 34-year-old Navy chief petty officer was arrested the other day after she allegedly fatally shot her husband while he was in the middle of a 911 call for help. According to the Santa Rosa County Sheriff, they stated that Bree Kuhn was charged with first-degree premeditated murder of her husband, Colin James Turner. Now, according to Johnson, at 12:53 p.m., Kuhn called 911 regarding an argument in reference to her kids. Johnson said a second call came in at 4:57 p.m., but it was Turner who phoned 911 at this time. Apparently, Johnson said that the call also had to do with their kids and that no one was arrested because there was no evidence of any physical altercation. Obviously, you can have a fight. As long as it doesn't get physical or if people aren't threatened, it's not a crime. Well, at 6:22, Turner called 911 again and told dispatch that Kuhn locked him in the garage. Johnson said that there's a gunshot that's audible in the background, and the husband states, she just shot me. Then there were apparently three more shots. Deputies arrived on the scene. Roughly 4 minutes later, they found Turner deceased inside the garage. Johnson said that the three children were inside the home when Turner was killed. Two of them are now in custody of social services. Johnson also stated that Chief Petty Officer Kuhn allegedly used a personal handgun, not a military-issued firearm. That doesn't surprise me because the government doesn't like let you take home the firearms when you're in the military. You have to put them back into the armory every day. Well, obviously, Miss Kuhn, Chief Petty Officer Kuhn, faces life in prison if she is ultimately convicted. And when you shoot somebody once, not twice, not three times, but four, guess what? That looks like after deliberation. And when the other person's calling for help, tough to say that it's going to be a self-defense case. Next on the docket, guess what? Bill Cosby. He's had a change of plans. As you may recall, Bill Cosby was released from a Pennsylvania prison several months ago because his conviction was turned over because it was determined by the court that he was granted immunity so that he could testify in a civil case. The district attorney made that promise. A new district attorney came in, prosecuted Bill Cosby, said that immunity agreement means nothing to me. Bill Cosby was ultimately sentenced to prison. Well, that was reversed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and Mr. Cosby is now free, but he is facing still additional civil cases. And as you may have heard, he thought he was going to hit the road. Well, sometimes plans change, and that's what took place here. Apparently, Bill Cosby has paused indefinitely his return for a tour, citing that it is nearing a trial involving a sexual assault lawsuit. This is the lawsuit that was filed back in 2014 by a woman by the name of Judith Huth. And according to, it's alleged that Cosby assaulted her in 1974 when he was 37 and she was 15. Cosby's denied the allegations, but he's concerned that the legal case would be the media's main focus when he was out on tour, and therefore he decided to halt any plans. Spokespeople for Bill Cosby contend that numerous promoters expressed interest in having Cosby appear and do shows on a tour. Now remember, Cosby is 84 years old. He's mostly blind, and I don't know if a lot of people would think it's funny to hear jokes from Bill Cosby these days. I don't know. Obviously, he is innocent in the eyes of the court, but in the court of public opinion, I think he may have a tough time filling those seats. All right, next on the docket, let's see if we can help the family of this missing woman, all right? So on June 18th of 2020, Lauren Dumelo walked into a convenience store and applied for a position at a sandwich shop, and this interaction was captured on videotape, and she had recently lost her job during the pandemic and was looking for a new job to support her five-year-old daughter, Michaela. Well, that evening, Lauren's on and off again boyfriend, Gabriel Pena, called her father to tell her that she was not home. Lauren's father told him to have Lauren call him when she returned. The call never came. On June 20th, a passerby found Lauren's purse in a nearby park, and they turned it over to the police. Now, the Cape Coral police scoured the area and used cadaver dogs in the search. Lauren remains missing to this day. Now, the police have interviewed Lauren's boyfriend, who had an alibi and has passed a polygraph test, and he is not a suspect in the case. Now, it's been over a year, and the family refuses to give up. Like, who would just give up? They're going to keep looking. So if anyone has any information, please call the Cape Coral Police at 239-574-3223. See if there's somebody out there that knows something, and maybe she looks familiar. Take a look at that photo. See if you can, in fact, help the police out, and more importantly, the family. All right, ladies and gentlemen, before we get to our dumb criminal contestant, please go to crimetalksearch.com. All right? We talk about dumb criminals, and we kind of do it a little tongue-in-cheek sometimes, but the reality of it is these people now have criminal histories, and these are the type of things that you want to know about people. You want to make sure that the people that you are dealing with are straight shooters and, well, frankly, maybe just have good judgment. And in today's world, if you are dating someone that maybe you met online and you don't check them out with a background check, you are committing dating malpractice. So when you go to crimetalksearch.com, you will be able to do a background search. It only takes a few minutes, and you're going to get information regarding criminal history, financial situation, property records, divorce records, and see if what the people are telling you is the absolute truth. Go to crimetalksearch.com. I'm telling you, you'll be happy you did. All right, now let's get to our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And this has got to be one of the dumber things that anybody could possibly do. And this is oftentimes something that you describe as just felony stupid, because you deserve a felony because you're just being stupid. Meet Marina Verbitsky. Now, she was arrested at the Fort Lauderdale International Airport after, get this, making false bomb threats. She and her friends apparently arrived late for her flight, and after they were told that she could not board, she said, get this, my baggage is on the plane and there's a bomb in it. Do I need to say anything more? Not really. Miss Verbitsky, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. And now it's up to our subscribers, our viewers, to decide if you are the dumb criminal contestant of the week. But before we get there, let's do a quick recap so that everybody knows who to vote for. Now, leave your vote in the comments below. We'll tally them up. I think you can also vote on Instagram, and we will tally the vote and decide who gets to be the dumb criminal contestant winner of the week, or you all do. And what do they get? That's right. Cool Crime Talk merchandise. Look at that. My personal favorite. Lawyer, lawyer, lawyer. And if you've been a longtime subscriber, you know what that means. But if you would like to get that cool gear without having to become a dumb criminal contestant yourself, just hit the link below. All right. Since Monday was the Labor Day, we jump straight to Tuesday. Remember Nicholas Ruthenberg? He got into a car accident in Florida, fled the scene, was eventually arrested. He was declaring all hail Donald Trump when he got to the jail. When asked for a drug test, he spread his buttocks and stuck two fingers in his anus. He'd also apparently been married earlier that day. And when information was checked out, they also determined that his official email, so to speak, is, get this, ifarted69@gmail.com. Wednesday, two teens committed a series of drive-by slushy attacks that they recorded on a GoPro camera for a YouTube channel prank. Well, police say Rafael Mercado and Kizzy McKay targeted victims in the area of Pinellas Park, in the area of Tampa Bay. Of course, it was recorded, and you can't go around throwing slushies at people and not expect to be charged with a crime. Well, they were. And then Thursday, Jessica Smith, 28, drove past several patrol cars while behind the wheel of a golf cart, completely naked. Smith allegedly ignored a police command to depart the area and continued to approach the target house where an armed suspect was on the roof. When Smith refused to exit the golf cart, she was assisted out and handcuffed. Ms. Smith smelled of an unknown odor of an alcoholic beverage. Oh, and by the way, did I mention she was completely nude? And then don't forget today's contestant, Miss Verbitsky, who makes bomb threats because she shows up late to the gate. Those are our dumb criminal contestants. Have a wonderful day. Leave us the comments below who you think should win, and we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.